So, Lewis, we're digressing.
Yes.
You will have another fact to show us.
It is
your turn, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, I think so. This one is Yama, the Lord of Death in Indian mythology.
Ooh.
And he sounds pretty intimidating.
Yeah.
At first. But then you realise that he actually was just... He was the first man to die. Blazing the path of mortality. So essentially he's just a trendsetter.
Oh.
He was like, right, I've died, I'm going to work.
I've had enough of this.
Yeah.
I'm off.
And so he was originally described as a sort of cheerful king of the dead. But he's since, over time, become more stern and fierce. And
that's now, what death does
now
too,
he
though.
Sort of passes judgment on the souls of those who've passed on.
He just sounds like he's generally just becomes discontent with everything. That life wasn't okay. Now death is wearing on him a bit.
I know, and the trouble is, like, you can get out of life when it gets boring, when you're old.
Although, I suppose if you're the god of death, you got a little bit more leeway.
Yeah.
You can do a little bit more with that.
There's probably more you can...
Did he know that he was going to get that job title?
Well, I mean, I didn't look into the story too much about when he first died.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting idea. Is it like, did he know, like, right, I'm going to get in there first?
Yeah.
So that one of us has got to become Lord of the Dead.
Like a job application. I'm the ideal candidate.
Because I am the first to die.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so his appearance is... He's described as majestic in appearance, green with red eyes and red garments. He carries a mace, which may be ornamented with a skull, and a noose, and rides a buffalo. His two four-eyed dogs guard the entrance to his kingdom, and the crow and the pigeon act as his messengers.
It's a big thing with dogs and guarding the underworld.
Yeah, well, I guess, like, dogs guard most things, don't they?
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, I don't know about you, but in my house... The dog just guards the front door, or sometimes the kitchen. Neither of which are particularly reminiscent of an underworld.
I don't even have a dog. We just use locks in our house.
What an old-fashioned! You got to get with the times.
Move on, man. Get a dog.
This Yama guy. I mean, I've always thought green to be a particularly magnificent color for a gentleman. Yes.
Yeah. It's. I just like the idea, like, riding on a buffalo. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
They don't make gods like that anymore.
I thought you were going to say they don't make buffaloes like that anymore. That's true. No, that's pretty cool. I'm glad you told me that. That's an interesting...
Have you ever had any near-death experiences while we're on the subject of Yama?
No, I don't think so. I thought you were going to say, have you had any near-death experiences with buffalo?
Very specific
question.
Choking
on a McCoy-flavoured crisp of the same flavour, perhaps not. I don't know. I can't think of. Have you?
Well, I thought I had a near death experience.
You thought you had a near death experience?
Yeah, but obviously, turns out I wasn't in any actual danger, but I thought I was for a moment.
I see.
It was more of a near death experience.
Right.
And basically, I was shaving because, as the listeners will have been able to tell from my voice,
you are indeed.
I'm incredibly manly and therefore can grow facial hair really well. And I was shaving, and then I just I caught my throat with a razor, and I was like, ow. And I thought, this is it. I've killed myself.
This is the end.
I've slit my own throat. And I, like, my whole life flashed before my eyes.
Yeah. All of the previous shaving experiences, the good times you'd had with the razor.
They'd gone so well.
Yeah.
And then I washed off all the shaving foam, and there was just this tiny red mark, and I hadn't slit my own throat.
Oh.
It was just a bit uncomfortable.
Oh. Well, I think what we've learned from that, listeners, is that Lewis is a massive drama queen.
Maybe.
I mean, when I was about 10 years old, at Halloween, I choked on a roast chestnut. That was pretty terrifying.
That does. I imagine Yama was looming behind you with
his
noose and his buffalo.
He was. But everybody else was watching the fireworks, so I was a little bit like...
Oh, so they didn't notice.
Somebody help.
What's that? That firework sounds like a cough.
I'm trying to think if there was anything else. I've probably choked on several different kinds of food.
Okay.
Maybe this is a lesson that I should chew properly.
Well, do you chew roast chestnuts? Like...
I mean, you don't just gulp them down.
Eat them like a gannet. I don't know. I've never had one.
You've never had a roast chestnut, right? We're going to get a pasty and a roast chestnut.
I think pasty is more normal than roast chestnut.
Well, not in Victorian London. What would you call it backwards?
A yeasty? No, that's not right.
a yeti-ap. Who knows?
A tasp. A TASB, I think that's what they call it.
Okay. No, that's interesting. I mean, I can make a little segue here onto my next fact.
Please do.
Which is to do with facial hair. Okay. I know one of your favourite topics. The word is barbigerous, and it means having a beard or being hairy.
Yeah.
So I could have just gone with beard, but I complicated things for myself by going through this avenue first and then researching beard. So yeah, I was looking at it means different things across the world to have a beard. Obviously now it's a bit of a, it's a bit kind of hipstery, it's fashionable. People put glitter and baubles and other strange things in beards. And there's a lot of, there's a big booming business in like beard wax and beard oil and beard shampoo.
I'm very familiar with that business.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah. Lewis being a very beardy man.
Yeah.
So it means different things across the world. It can be cut or shaved off for different offences. So ancient Greeks saw it as a sign of virility. And if you were a coward, I can't really say that word properly.
What is it?
A coward.
A coward.
Like,
spell it.
C-O-W-A-R-D.
C-O-W.
A-R-D.
A coward.
Yeah, a coward.
Oh, I see. Well, that completely threw me off.
Okay, if you were one of those.
Yes.
If you were not brave.
A yellow belly.
Yes, if you were a yellow belly.
A lily liver.
Ooh, with onions. in ancient Greece. Mm-hmm. No, in Sparta. Spartans would shave off a section of your beard. Not all of the beard, just a little strip.
I've done that to someone at a party.
Oh, okay. Was it because they were a
card? They were a card. They were an absolute card.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. They also, in ancient Greece, often curled their beards with tongs, which I didn't know existed in ancient Greece. Curling tongs were a thing.
Yeah.
I always just assumed that ancient Greeks and Romans had naturally curly hair. Apparently not.
That's an interesting comment, because now I think about it, all busts, like Roman busts and things,
yeah,
like marble busts, they all have curly beards. Great, like Plato.
Yeah.
He's got a great curly beard going.
Well,
on.
See, apparently, in Rome, a philosopher equals beard. Beard equals philosopher. You got a beard, you're a philosopher. Oh, that's how it goes.
Oh, so you don't, like, just anyone can grow a beard and become a philosopher?
Yeah, that's it. Once it's reached full maturity as a beard, suddenly, bam. That's, I mean, not really. Genuinely, but it was a sign of your profession to have a beard. You were a philosopher.
Like a uniform.
Except for Aristotle, who didn't want to conform to those and stay clean shaven. Oh.
Him having a beard.
What?
I imagine him having a
beard.
Yeah,
well, I imagine every ancient philosopher to have a beard. Maybe that's...
I just imagine everyone to have a beard.
Just in your mind, everyone. Yeah. Christina Aguilera, beard. Roman boys in ancient Rome oiled their chins to make beards grow.
Just
smeared some olive oil.
I've tried that one along with the egg yolks.
Yeah.
It just turned into a fried egg.
Oil and egg yolks. That's it. You got a nice firm chin, a little bit of stubble there. Alexander the Great ordered shaving because he was afraid that beards would serve as handles for enemies to grab during warfare.
I think that's
fair enough.
It's like, I suppose I wouldn't grab a chin, but I could grab a beard.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. But also, I assume if you're a soldier on the move, having a beard is pretty inconvenient in terms of hygiene.
Well, it's an interesting one. I think the whole trend for beard shampooing has really sprung up recently. I don't think people really shampooed their beards before.
Yeah, like, which is a bit...
That's partly gross because you get like food in it and things, but also I think hair starts to release like natural oils if you don't wash it long enough.
Yeah, I mean, I did see a thing the other day that was something about beards assisting with antibiotic resistance and stuff because of the bacteria that's in them.
What, because they're so gross?
Yeah, so there was something like that. I didn't really read the article because I myself don't have a beard, and so it's irrelevant to me in my life.
That's a very selfish outlook. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't think of the show. I wasn't thinking of the people whenever it popped up. There's one little throwback to last week that I want to bring up.
Okay.
So later on in the kind of ancient Roman time, your first time shaving for a man was a little ceremony. It was a festival.
Yeah.
And you would keep your beard hair and dedicate it to one of the gods. Because what god doesn't want a little bit of stubble just sprinkled over their altar whatever?
So it's not like a lot of beard hair, because presumably if you're first time shaving.
Yeah, it's just a little sprinkle.
Okay.
You know, you don't want to draw in the gods in beard hair. But you want... And Nero, our good friend he took his first beard hair and put it in a golden box which was inlaid with pearl. because Nero's just cray, and why would you not want to save your first beard hair in a little box in your house?
That's the same kind of box that the Yakuza bosses use for the little tips of
fingers. Yeah, maybe it's just beard hair and fingers. Just pop it all in there. Give it a little shake. Maybe you could put that in your chin,
like,
and
recipe.
Save it. Yeah. So yeah, I think that is all of my beard facts.
I think one thing I know, which is probably fairly well known, maybe I'm just being pointless, but the barbarian, the word barbarian comes from barb or beard, and essentially it just meant people with beards.
Nice.
Like, that's how they defined anyone who was a barbarian.
That's pretty cool. What about Barbara as a name?
It's interesting. Should we have a look at the etymology?
The etymology of Barbara.
I don't know if we have time. I'll do on to my next fact.
I'll look this up.
And you look it up.
Okay.
I hope it is bearded one, because that would be hilarious.
It would redefine our concept of the beard.
I don't know any Barbaras, but I will find one and tell her.
And befriend
them. Her name means bearded.
And then years into the friendship, reveal that you only became friends with her because of the etymology of the name.
I think that would go down a treat. It's how I find most of my friends. Sasha, meaning sash window. I don't know. Well, yeah, my next fact is it's one very appropriate to our locale. The Yorkshire pudding, a batter pudding similar to a souffle.
Okay.
And so it's a Yorkshire pudding staple. I've gone quite staple foodie this time, actually,
yeah.
Haven't I? Other than the Yakuza and the God of Death.
Other than those two facts, we've stuck with food, yeah.
But it's... it has an interesting history. It was when wheat flour began to come into common use for making cakes and puddings, cooks in the north of England devised a means of making use of the fat that dropped into the dripping pan to cook a batter pudding while the meat roasted. In 1737, a recipe called for a dripping pudding, later called a Yorkshire pudding, was published in that classic of the era, The Whole Duty of a Woman. I'm sure you've read it, Sasha.
Oh yes, it's one of my favourite books.
Have it by the bed.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, but Yorkshire puddings, they sort of start off. The Royal Society of Chemistry has said that a Yorkshire pudding isn't a Yorkshire pudding unless it rises to at least 4 inches tall.
Okay, right. I'm not being funny, but don't they have better things to do than define a Yorkshire pudding's height?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, the Royal Society of Chemistry. Maybe they would take umbrage at that. We could ask some chemistry students if they're just a sort of body.
Is this
really
what you thought when you entered your degree? Is this the end game? Defining different foodstuffs. I just want to interject here.
Yeah,
I don't want to interrupt your Yorkshire pudding.
No, that's okay. Please do.
No.
It's fine. It's fine.
I just wanted to tell you about the etymology of Barbara.
Yeah.
It's a female-given name used in numerous languages. It is the feminine form of the Greek word barbaros, which means foreign. So it is related to barbarian.
Yeah.
So Barbara the Barbarian.
Excellent.
Nice. Anyway, just
and
wanted
I
to
think,
throw that
on the
in
same
there.
Line, rhubarb comes from the same place as well.
Barbara's rhubarb. Barbara's barbarian rhubarb.
Apparently, rhubarb is the word that they tell extras to use. To make it look like they're talking.
Yes, I've
well.
Heard that. You stand in the background and go, rhubarb, rhubarb, rhubarb. That sounds like you're having a smashing conversation.
Maybe we should try out the radio.
Yeah.
If things start going a bit slow.
You'll know that it's all going downhill when the code word rhubarb comes to play.
Rhubarb, rhubarb.
Anyway, sorry. Do you have any more interesting things to tell us about
Yorkshire
pudding?
I don't know how much more there is to say about Yorkshire pudding in general. I mean, I looked up why is it called a pudding, just in general, and... It obviously tends to refer to a sweet, a dessert.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes from the French boudin.
Boudin.
From the Latin botulus, which means small sausage. So
a
I'm
swag,
assuming the original. A small swag.
A small swag.
I'm assuming the original kind of pudding was like a sausage roll then.
Ooh, nice.
But yeah, you get rice pudding, Christmas pudding, Yorkshire pudding, black pudding, steak and kidney pudding.
Are you going to list all of the puddings?
All
this
the
is the last 20 minutes of the show. It's just Lewis naming pudding.
I think I could...
suet pudding,
I could
bread and butter pudding.
And basically, Yorkshire pudding is great. Do you have a favourite kind of roast? Do you not eat roast as well?
I'm not a massive roast person. I don't really eat meat, so...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I can have a bit of, apart from liver. Well, liver is food of the gods. I mean, you can't not eat liver.
Ambrosia.
Occasionally, I like a bit of stuffing and gravy and a Yorkshire pudding.
Okay.
But I feel like, I mean, the Yorkshire pudding that my mum makes probably isn't real Yorkshire pudding, as we're not from Yorkshire or in Yorkshire or have any family from Yorkshire.
Well, it's interesting, the idea of, like, can a Yorkshire pudding be made outside of Yorkshire? Or is it just like a bath
the
pudding?
Eternal question. The question on everyone's mind.
I mean, because I know Cornish pasties, they sued. I don't know who they are, but they sued and said, unless it's made in Cornwall, it can't be called a Cornish pasty.
Okay. I'm going to claim that for any kind of Irish pub, no. Irish stew, no. Everything.
Has to be made in Ireland.
Baths. Can I have a bath outside a bath? So I'm going to move on to one of my words now. That's okay with you.
It's fine. Yeah.
Okay.
Please do.
I don't really know which one to go for first. The eternal problem. Right, I'm going to go for this one. The word is bardolatry. Okay?
Okay.
And it actually means the worship or excessive love of Shakespeare.
Mm.
Right?
Well,
as English students, we're of course familiar with this.
We suffer from bardolatry.
But some people have taken it a little too far. Some people have gone a bit... There was a guy called David Garrick, who was an actor and theatre producer in, I don't know, 1700s
or something. I recognise the name, I think.
Yeah. So he did... He kind of adapted Shakespeare from modern audiences at the time, which is still yonks ago. Long time ago. But he constructed a temple to Shakespeare at his home in Hampton and just filled it with all of his Shakespeare memorabilia.
Wow.
So he was an ultimate fan.
Nice.
He was, I wonder what you a call a Shakespeare fan. Like, you got believers
and directioners.
Yeah. What would you call a...
You
think of one while I say the rest of the facts. Okay.
Yeah.
Not to put you on the spot or anything.
No pressure.
So in the Victorian era, many writers treated Shakespeare's work as an equivalent or replacement to the Bible, which is interesting, seeing as, you know,
I can understand maybe called literarily. I do the subject aesthetically. You could argue it's as good.
Yeah, but I don't know if it gives across the same morals.
Thematically, yeah.
Taming of the Shrew. Not quite sure. Romeo and Juliet. What does that tell us? Yeah, and also, I think it was in the 1970s or the 1990s, quite recently, there was a book written by a man called Harold Bloom about Shakespeare, in which he claimed that he was the inventor of humanity, which I also find an interesting concept.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Humanity is in the species, or the humanity is in, like, being compassionate?
As in, I think he means being compassionate.
Okay.
I'm going to have a little bit of a look and see if I can
I think people were nice before Shakespeare.
Yeah, I mean, let's hope so. If Shakespeare was the invention, Shakespeare was born and boom, suddenly people started having emotions, I would be a little concerned. Yeah, it says, it's in his, the Shakespeare, the invention of the human. Bardolatry ought to be even more a secular religion than it already is. He prescribed the now common practice of overhearing ourselves. Basically, Shakespeare rules all, and we have everything to thank him for, including our own self-consciousness.
And that's bardolatry.
Yeah, or you know, building a little church for Shakespeare and sticking all of your Shakespeare bobbly heads in it.
That's an interesting idea. When did the first bobbly head get invented? I'm not sure we could find that.
I'll have a go. Have you thought of any names for a Shakespeare fan?
Well, like Shakespizzles.
Shakespizzles, yeah.
Going down the sort of T-swizzle.
Shakeswag.
The T-swizzle route.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know, like, it doesn't lend itself in the same way as, like, believers.
No, not quite. Yeah, we need to think of, maybe we'll come back to that next show.
Yeah.
We'll have a...
Send in your suggestions, Shakespeare fans.
Shakespeare fans and listeners, all in one.
Oh, look, I found the history of the bobblehead.
Yeah. Is it thrilling?
It
sounds
thrilling. I'm reading it as I say, so I hope there's nothing rude in there. The earliest known reference to a bobblehead is thought to be in Nikolai Gogol's... Is it Gogol? I mean, I'd study English, I should probably know. Short story, 1842, short story. The
1840 shoe.
1840 shoe.
The little known
My
year.
My favourite year. the overcoat, in which the main character's neck was described as like the necks of plastic cats which wag their heads. And then the the modern bobblehead first appeared in the 1950s with baseball things.
Ooh.
That's interesting.
That is interesting. There's a little... Oh, actually, it does begin with B, so we can include it in our encompassing of Bardolatry and bobbleheads. That's what we've learned today.
That's what we've learned. So, what's your favourite Shakespeare play, Sasha? Just to get a bit serious on this for the listener.
Let's go into literary criticism. I quite enjoy Midsummer Night's Dream. That's it's up there. Winter's Tale, purely for exit pursued by a bear.
Yeah.
The in joke for English students everywhere. We all love to just pull out.
Exit pursued by a bear.
What about you?
Well, I mean, I actually am very horrified to have to admit this. I haven't seen or read very many Shakespeare.
I thought you were going
to
say any.
No, I've done one. We studied it last year.
Oh.
I like Othello. I think that's quite...
Othello's good, yeah.
It's a bit depressing.
Love a bit of...
As is the nature of tragedy.
So, Lewis, we've only got 10 minutes left.
Oh, goodness. Well, I'll do my last one in that case.
Okay. I mean, I don't want to rush your...
I mean, I was just
humour and intelligence and your
ruminating on Othello. But yes, so my last one is The Yard of Ale Glass, which is a drinking glass known in England from the 17th century. Mm-hmm. Which is, yeah, I mean, you may have seen them before. They hold 2.5 pints.
Nice.
And they sort of look like a stick man who's had his arms ripped off in a tragic drinking accident upside down. So they've got this sort of big bulb at the end and then a long trumpet-like flute.
Okay.
And the difficulty is you've got to try and down it in one go. That's the challenge.
Yeah.
But because of the bulb at the end, you suddenly get a face full of beer right in the last minute when you think you're getting close.
Oh.
And so it's an interesting tradition.
Have you ever done one?
Me, no. I think I would probably die. Even just drinking water too fast.
Yama would appear.
Makes me lightheaded, yeah.
Yeah. The sound of buffalo hooves in the distance.
It's happening. but yeah, I think it sounds like it's been around since the 17th century, yeah. So all the best inventions happened around then.
Yeah.
And Wikipedia says that the... what did it say? Such a glass was testament to the glassblower's skill as much as the drinker's. And I like that. I think...
Surely, firstly, to the glassblower's skill and then the drinker's.
Like, I mean, I feel like that's another thing. I wonder if the same person who wrote the Yakuza entry on the tattoo, because it feels the same kind of theme of like, it's almost as hard for the drinker as it is for the glassblower. Like,
for the drinker to get inebriated on some beer as for the glassblower to literally do his job and create an entire hand-blown glass.
My favourite little nugget about this was that when he was at... It happens a lot at Oxford and Cambridge, they're sort of like drinking games that they do. And former Australian Prime Minister Bob Hawke was previously the world record holder for the fastest drinking of a yard of beer. And so how fast do you think he did it? He was at Oxford at the time.
Oh, I don't know. Tell me.
11 seconds.
11 seconds.
11 seconds. I couldn't down a normal pint.
No,
that time.
I don't think I could drink a glass of water in that time.
But he reckons it contributed more to his political success than any other attribute. The fact that he is
got his name out there.
The fact that he had this world record for drinking a yard of ale.
That's the political campaign you need.
I mean, I think, well, Nigel Farage kind of goes down that route.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't been convinced so far.
No.
But if I saw him with a whole yard of ale, not just a pint, who knows?
Yeah, well, that's pretty cool. Maybe we should make that a New Year's resolution.
To do a yard of ale while you eat a pasty.
Yeah.
And you eat a roasted chestnut.
Well, who's going to be doing the yard of ale then?
I mean, just wash it down.
Okay, that's fair. You got to be careful with roast chestnuts. They induce choking.
Okay.
We definitely will not do it on any kind of fireworks occasion. Safety first.
Yeah, I mean, the yard of ale, that's safe.
Yeah, so my fifth and final fact. Well, I mean, it's kind of my eighth fact because I threw in those extra three. But anyway, I've picked really difficult words to say this week, and I'm kind of hating past me. Batrachomancy. Okay?
Batrachomancy.
Yeah, which is a method of divination using frogs, toads, or newts.
Ah.
Right? And apparently this can be as innocent as observing the said creatures in your garden, or as involved as actually using parts of their body in divination, like Eye of Newt.
As involved. I like that.
Yeah. So I thought that this was a bit weird.
Hmm.
And looked up a couple of other types of divination, beginning with the letter B.
Yeah.
Again, I'm kind of throwing in extra words here.
That's all right.
So I'm sorry. Bellomancy, which is using arrows to divine the future.
Oh, is where the arrow goes?
I think so. I didn't actually look that far into it. I just saw that and thought, oh, interesting. Okay. Bletonomancy, which is to do with the water current. Apparently by observing water currents, you can tell the future. Brontomancy, which is by thunder. Although it sounds a bit
that's
like
a cool one.
Bromancy.
Yeah.
And bumpoology, which is bumps on the skin. Blips, if you will.
Blips.
Yeah. Apparently, using the bumps in your skin, you can tell what's going to
that's
happen.
That's kind of what palm reading is, isn't it, I guess?
Well, kind of. But, I mean, at least... is there anything really, really individual about the bumps?
Maybe
I don't even think I have bumps on my skin.
Maybe that's why teenagers get acne. Because they've got so much life
ahead of
them.
They've just got so much future that's bursting to be told.
As you get older, you just lose it because less future.
Yeah. That's why it just all sags. It just all slowly melts as your future ends.
Yeah. That is interesting. Like, so what was the first one again? Sorry. The original one.
Yeah, the
toads.
Yeah, the toads and frogs ones. Batrachomancy.
I wonder why newts became part of traditional witch potions.
I mean, newts aren't really that common, are they? I've never seen a newt in real life. Have you ever seen a newt in real life?
I think I have. We went on a school trip when I was in primary school to, I think, a pond.
A school trip to a pond?
Yeah. I went to a pretty wild school, and I think there was a newt there. I fished it out with a jam jar.
Did you put it back?
Yeah, of course.
Or did you use it to
I'm
tell the future?
I'm not a monster. I just got...
You didn't pop out its eye and then run off to...
To
your cauldron.
Yeah.
With a little... That's actually what it was.
One interesting fact I've heard about frogs or toads, I think... I can't remember where it was, but there was a place and they kept finding these exploded toads.
Okay.
Like, just loads of them.
Uh-huh.
And they just kept exploding. I couldn't understand why.
Just scientists and standing there and toads exploding left,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
Centre.
Yeah, like, genuinely, you could hear them popping.
Okay,
nearby.
That's disgusting. Okay.
And so they sent some biologists in, or zoologists or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And
Toadologists.
Mm-hmm. And they realised that there was they were birds,
mm-hmm,
that were flying down, and they'd learnt where the livers on these toads were.
Mm-hmm.
They'd peck out the liver and eat that, because obviously they had essays to prepare for, like you.
Yes.
And then the toads, without a liver, would carry on living because it'd just been pulled straight out.
Okay.
But they would start to swell up for whatever reason.
And because of lack of liver.
Lack of liver. And then they'd burst.
Really?
Yeah.
Right, what I'm struggling to understand is, I mean, does the toad go, oh, my liver's gone? Or is it more of an unconscious process where the bird is so sneaky
that
it's
anymore?
Just
I'm going to explode.
Yeah. No, but I mean, was the bird just sneaky enough that?
Oh no, I think the toad probably notices. But what do you do? Birds can fly, toads can't.
Yeah. Well, I suppose.
That's the most secure fact you're going to get off this show.
Yeah, that's the one that we can assure you, listeners, is incredible. That's true.
The saturated fact. Seal of approval. Right?
I guarantee you there's probably going to be a flying toad now.
Yeah.
I'm going to Google it.
I'm going to look at flightless birds. Oh no, wait.
Oh, yeah. there is a flying toad.
Oh,
no?
For goodness sake.
Yes, there is. Oh, it's a flying frog, but it has got wings.
What?
Kind of the same thing.
Oh.
Everything
right.
we knew was a lie.
We retract our seal of approval.
Sorry for giving that erroneous fact out too. But yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Apparently, not like toads. Everybody thinks toads and frogs ribbit over here, but they don't. Apparently, they only do in America or something.
American toads ribbit.
Yeah, or frogs or whatever. The ones over the native European frogs don't actually make noise, I don't think.
Oh, it's not because they're American.
No,
it's just because our species of toads
that can only be found.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. No, it wasn't. You don't mean like just because
not
they
because
live
they hold an American passport. No, that's not the key to.
Okay.
You know, verbal freedom for the frog families.
Well.
But yeah. Did you have any words this week that you were going to include, that you were close to including?
I had a couple. There was one, Boris Borisovich Yegorov, who is a Russian cosmonaut and doctor. He was the first doctor in space.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it wasn't that much about him, that's why I didn't choose him. But one interesting fact that I found was that he, him and his crewmates, and when they went up to space, they just wore winter coats. They didn't have space suits. They just had woolen coats on.
Okay.
And I have huge respect for that.
I'm struggling to understand how that works.
Well, they weren't out in the vacuum of space, just like, oh, do my
like
buttons
not
up.
Wandering around in the moon.
No.
In a duffel coat.
But they just like, if there had been any loss of air,
yeah,
they would have struggled, because wool's right. not known for its spacesuity property.
Funnily enough,
yeah,
nobody's thought of that. Yeah, okay, it's not like they were knitted some spacesuits before they went up to space.
I hope their mums knitted yeah, them spacesuits.
Tons of grandmas sitting in NASA stitching up a couple of suits. I mean, I assume that did they have the proper helmets and things?
No, I don't think so.
They literally were just
in winter coats.
In winter coats in space.
Yeah,
that's cool. Mm. That's pretty hardcore.
He's a Soviet hero.
Is it because of the winter coats?
Well, I mean, I would...
Maybe because of the space bit. Yeah, I'm sure Russia's quite used to winter coats. Wow, that's pretty cool. That is an interesting fact. I'm glad I asked, you know.
Oh, wow. You're welcome.
That's genuinely wowed me. Yeah, anything else? Anything else of note that you want to throw in there? As we wind down?
Well, I mean, there was a Yamato Takuriri. He's a Japanese folklore character, and his name literally means Brave Prince of Yamato.
Okay.
I just thought that's a good name.
Yeah? Like, yeah. Solid. You wouldn't be disappointed if you saw that in a birth certificate.
Yeah.
I mean, I say that as if you read your own birth certificate to find out your own name.
Many times.
This is the ceremony of uncovering. Yeah, I find a few that were quite interesting. Beblubbered. Is to have your face disfigured by tears.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, if you are
that's
beblubbered.
An amazing word.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
I dare you to get that in your next essay.
Yeah, I shall. Challenge accepted. What else was there? Oh, there was something else that was really good. I can't remember. Balmorality is when you assume Scottish customs and things as your own when they're not. Okay. I am assuming that they're naming it
so
after Balmoral.
So if I were to speak like this and pretend that I was Scottish,
exactly,
I'd be suffering from Balmorality.
Would you like to introduce the news with that same accent?
All right then, well, if you'd carry on listening for a few more moments. Oh, I think I'm losing it, Sasha.
There you are.
Okay, well, if you carry on listening, you'll find that the news is about to come on. Oh dear, that went wobbly. I got distracted. But yeah.
AM and online. This is your Kinney's student radio station.
Afternoon.